Thought it was, and when we really started to pull back the reality and look at the consequences, how it impacted our lives, we can document and we can see that instead of empowering us, it really stripped us of who we were. And as so many of the women say, a part of us died, they are children dead.
It goes against every mothering instinct that I believe every woman really has.
I saw very quickly that abortion is a wound to the soul, and that all my therapeutic techniques and that all the things that I had learned in school were kind of lame to even treat this problem, because when there's a wound to the soul, it requires a spiritual process for healing.
That wound in your body is a precious, precious sanctuary, and an enemy has gotten into the mix to turn that womb into a tomb. But Christ comes right to that same place to turn that place of death, that tomb, back into a womb.
The promise of Christianity is better than most people know. It is more than forgiveness. Yes, Christianity does offer forgiveness to all of us. And it's beautiful to be a forgiven person, but there's more. When Jesus announced the purpose of his arrival, when Jesus of Nazareth stepped into the scene and he told everyone, this is why I've come, this is who the Messiah is, and this is why he's here, he pointed back to an ancient prophecy from the book of Isaiah that goes like this: I have come to heal the brokenhearted and set the captive free. He sets the captive free from fear, from regret, from anger, from resentment, from whatever it is that the trauma has done to us. He releases us from those things. In other words, what Jesus says is, I want to give you your heart back. I want to give you your whole heart back. Will you let me?
So abortion is a matter of the heart. It is a soul wound. Why? Because it's a loss issue. Obviously, a child is lost, but there's so much more involved. But in our country, abortion is not recognized as a loss. In the case of a child, there's no service, there's no memorial, there's no wake, there's funeral. And so thus, the grief that is natural and all the emotions associated with the loss of a child and abortion, they must be buried. And they're not to be talked about, and they're buried until some sort of trigger event pushes the grief emotions to the surface. Now, how many people have been wounded by abortion? Well, there's a lot. Just look at the numbers. 3,000 abortions every day. 10 people are affected for every abortion that occurs, including moms, dads, those obvious ones. 65% of women who abort state that they have a Christian affiliation, said 37% are Protestant and 28% are Catholic. There have been 55 million abortions since 1973, and 43% of women have an abortion before the age of 45. So there are a lot of wounded people in our communities. Now, who are the wounded? Well, that's pretty simple. They're moms, dads, grandparents, friends, siblings of the aborted child, friends of the mom or dad, and what are their losses? Well, for the mom, obviously, it's the loss of a child and a loss of a parenting opportunity, loss of goals and a vision of their future, loss of self-esteem. Many women will say, how could I have been so stupid and done such a thing? Loss of a relationship with a boyfriend or with the spouse. There's about a 50% breakup in relationships when an abortion occurs. There's loss of relationship with parents. Did they coerce her? Did they tell her that she had to have the abortion? Did her parents want her to carry the pregnancy? Did they even know about the pregnancy? There's also a loss of the self-image, how a woman views herself as a Christian and as a mother. How about dads? Oops. Fathers. Obviously, the loss of the fatherhood, failure to protect your child, loss of relationship, particularly with the mother, and particularly if he pushed her to have the abortion or left her with no support, loss of his self-image as a protector, and father of his children. What about grandparents? There's a loss there of the relationship with their own child, with the mother or father of the parent that aborted that child. I've heard a lot, why didn't they come to me? They knew I would have helped. Why didn't they tell me ahead of time? Why did they just let me know later when the abortion had occurred? Obviously, the loss of the grandchild in that relationship. And there's a big loss of how you view your family, that you have had an abortion occur in your own family. How about friends? Friends have loss of self-esteem. Why didn't I say something to her? Why didn't I help? Why did this happen? And of course, loss of the friendship, particularly if she feels anger toward that person who took her. And then we have siblings of the aborted child. Also, loss of the familial relationship with the aborted child. What would we have done together? How would we have grown up? Loss of the relationship with the parents. Would my parents have done that to me? A loss of self-image and value as a person. Would my parents even have had me if they had had this other child? Or am I just a replacement child? So there's lots and lots of wounded. Where are they? They're everywhere. They're everywhere. They're in your workplaces. They're in your schools. They're in your churches, in your family, in your PTA groups, on the soccer fields, in your neighborhoods. They're just everywhere. Now, how do women suffer from abortion? There's three primary ways we talk about, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Now, physically, they could have perhaps a ruptured uterus that may impair them, even cause death. They may, perhaps the abortions may leave part of the baby inside of the uterus, which could cause infections. There may be other repercussions, such as premature birth or miscarriage of future pregnancies. There's also a lot of emotional issues. Some reactions will occur immediately following abortion, some much later. Most women can't just shake the feelings of regret, grief, and pain that occur with abortion. There are spiritual issues. They feel that they have committed the unforgivable sin. And they feel that they shouldn't be involved in church. They feel that they're hypocrites. If only the person next to me knew what I did, that I'm a hypocrite. God will punish me. Those are often reactions, spiritual reactions, of women and men who have abortions. Now, what about men? Men also do suffer, but not perhaps in ways that women do. They don't tend to make the connection necessarily between the symptoms they are feeling and the abortion that occurred. It's not uncommon for men to take up to even 10 years before they will make that connection between their unhealthy behavior and their abortion. Basically, the emotional issues are the same. They have an inability to form trusting relationships, particularly if the woman aborted and they didn't want that to happen. They're angry, risk-taking, depression, suicidal feelings, panic attacks, and addictions. And spiritually, it's the same. They also feel that they have committed the unforgettable sin. So we're going to watch a little video on post-abortion. Now, let's help this come.
Guilt, anxiety, and depression, just heartache, tremendous heartache, nightmares about their abortion, or their nightmares maybe symbolic of their abortion.
I tried to commit suicide.
Post-abortion syndrome is a very real phenomenon to the woman who experiences it. And we talk to someone who's had an abortion. If they're open and honest and can talk to you about it, they will tell you that the anxiety and the guilt and the depression is a very real situation that they deal with on a daily basis.
The doctor said to me, after the abortion, you may feel sad for a couple of days, and then you're going to be fine. Which was such a lie, because immediately I felt relieved, which is what most women feel, the relief. And yet, years later, I was just sinking in depression.
I didn't realize that having this procedure done would result in such dire consequences for my life.
Post-abortion syndrome is really a form of post-traumatic stress disorder. It's coping with a trauma. And women have a tremendous difficulty coping with the painful emotions and thoughts that are associated with an abortion experience.
43% of American women are post-abortive. And in the church, I suspect it's a higher percentage because women are broken, and the church is filled with broken people, and they hide. It's a secret. Women are so wounded.
Women who've had an abortion don't want to recall that painful period in their life. So they will actively try not to think about it, avoid anything and everything that has to do with the abortion experience.
I didn't know I was experiencing this, but now looking back, I know. I was acknowledging my sin, that I had murdered my child, and with that comes tremendous shame and anger and guilt. Angry at myself for making that choice, angry at all the voices from our culture, from my family, from the doctor, from the pastor, from Planned Parenthood, every voice coming at me speaking abortion.
Well, part of what brings about healing is acknowledging that what I chose to destroy was life. For myself, how I deal with post-abortive women is through a Christian worldview. These women, in their mind, know that they have transgressed at least their own moral code, if not God's moral code. And they know that in order to feel at peace, they need reconciliation. So the peace that they get through knowing that God loves them, that God is a forgiving God, that God is not a vengeful God, that He offers forgiveness through His Son, Jesus, is the most healing aspect of their experience after an abortion. I really learned about the attributes of God through His Son, Jesus Christ, and learned about the Holy Spirit. I learned what real forgiveness is. I learned that there was nothing that I could have done except rejecting Him that I couldn't be forgiven of.
I met Jesus, and my life radically changed. And that was the time that God said, "Susan, what you have done goes against my word. It's murder." And I was the first time then that I really dealt with my choice. And I was so mortified, I guess, with the choice that I had made. It was the first time I really recognized how serious this choice was and how it would impact me for the rest of my life. You have to strip through that denial, and you have to say, "This is sin. I committed murder." Years later, when I got healing, I prayed and asked God to show me the sex of my child. And I know that my child is a girl. She's alive. She's in heaven. And her name is Rachel. I've named her Rachel. The reason we name our babies is to give them dignity. They're alive. They're alive. And they deserve a name.
Okay. Here we go. I did.
Oh. You don't say that screen just works.
Just keep pressing buttons.
See?
No, I can't read.
Oh, get your glasses on. There we are. Okay. What would we do without him? I want to talk a little bit about Word of Hope, because Word of Hope deals with some of those issues that you just talked about, that you heard that woman talk about in this video. Word of Hope is the ministry of Lutherans for Life that was founded in 1991. and it was founded as an outreach to Lutheran women primarily who are post-abortive. At that time, there was really no ministry, or post-abortion had really just become recognized. We'd started by sponsoring a conference in the Chicago area, and we had over 200 people come, pastors, deaconesses, people who worked in crisis pregnancy centers who were beginning to see this issue of post-abortion and did not know how to handle it. So it was started in 1991, and it was started as a mission. Our mission is really to bring the healing of Jesus Christ to those whose hearts are broken by abortion. So we bring the healing of Christ to those people who believe that they have committed an unforgivable sin. People will call and they ask, do you really think God can forgive me for this horrible thing I've done, for taking the life of my baby? And so what we really do, besides just working through symptoms, is to constantly reassure them that Jesus died for that sin as well, and that they are forgiven and forgiven, forgiven, forgiven. And so we use a lot of scripture in our work as well. I'll talk a little bit about that as we go forward. And we are free and confidential, okay? No one pays for anything when they give us a call. So what services do we provide? Non-judgmental care. Now, the non-judgment is the key word here, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, but that is a critical way that you have to look at these sort of situations. We do crisis intervention, obviously, for people who are experiencing severe symptoms. We have support groups and Bible studies in the Chicago area for both women who are post-abortive as well as who have experienced sexual abuse in their past. There is a strong correlation between the two, so we offer both Bible studies. We do referrals to agencies. We include a lot of crisis pregnancy centers when we refer all across the country, and also other social agencies for other types of symptoms she may be experiencing. We do pregnancy assistance. She may be a first-time pregnancy or other pregnancies, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. We operate by a hotline with phone counseling, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Most of our work is done via hotline or email. Now, who do we work with? Obviously, we work with pregnancy centers as referrals. A lot of pregnancy centers do offer group work for post-abortion healing, and we will use them as a referral as needed. All over the country, we work with schools, all levels, high schools, colleges, universities. We work with Concordia Chicago sometimes as well, training deaconesses on this issue. We work with prisoners. There is a lot of post-aborted women in prison. Men also, anger issues are enormous. We can talk a little bit about that later. Also with the U.S. military, there are huge sexual issues in the military with rape, and we will talk to women who have experienced that and are pregnant as well. We work with churches, church workers, pastors, deaconesses, youth workers, lay people, all sorts of people that are involved in their church, and also other types of social service agencies, health departments, health professionals, domestic violence shelters, addiction centers, sexual assault and rape centers, and adoption centers. Now, who do we talk to? Well, we get about 270 calls per month, plus 5 to 10 emails per day from people that are needing help. And each of these calls and each of these emails takes a lot of time to answer because there's a lot of questions that are asked by these women who call us. Primarily, there's two types of calls we receive. Obviously, the post-abortion calls from men and women for help with problems with an abortion. They need primarily someone who will listen to them and talk about, so that they can talk about their abortion experience and what they are feeling. And that's why the non-judgmental part becomes so key when we talk to them. They need to talk to someone who won't judge them. And that's obvious, because then they are open. If they don't feel judged, they feel like they can talk. So it's very important that you present yourself properly. And we help them realize that they are not alone, that we offer hope and healing through Christ and his sacrifice on the cross. Pregnancy assistance calls. They are calling perhaps because they are pregnant and considering abortion. They may be being pressured by parents or boyfriends to have that abortion, or they may be concerned about a new pregnancy because a doctor has told them something is wrong with the baby. Some fear that God may be going to punish them because of a previous abortion in their past, or they're fearful of having a miscarriage, or something may be wrong with the baby because of this abortion experience. They all feel that God may be wanting to punish them. And likewise, they all need to be reassured of God's love for them and for whatever they call about. Now, characteristics of the women who call. emotions and symptoms. Most women just can't shake the feelings of pain, grief, and shame. Many could be depressed. They can't function well. They are sleeping all the time or can't sleep. They have nightmares, addictions, relationship problems, anger, divorce, basically some of the psychological damage that is caused by an abortion. Age of callers, they range anywhere from a young teenager to 94, basically, and the whole gamut of ages. But predominantly from the ages of 27 to 45 would be the largest group of women who call us. Location, they come from all over the world. Predominantly from the U.S., we have calls and emails from prisoners writing from their cells that we'll correspond with. We've received calls from a woman who was raped and is requesting help while on a military base in Afghanistan. Religion, mostly Christian. Many are Lutherans or referred by some sort of Lutheran connection. They have a friend or whatever. But almost always Christian. Men, about 5% are men. Some are post-abortive, but many are calling because the woman in their life is experiencing some of the symptoms involved with post-traumatic stress and post-abortion, and they are looking for help in dealing with that. But no matter what the age or where they are, one thing remains the same about all of our callers. Their description of their feelings include depression and sadness and guilt surrounding the abortion experience. And they are desperately in need of help, and they want to talk to someone. Now, some of the most unexpected calls we've received was a 93-year-old woman who couldn't forget the abortion she had more than 60 years ago when abortion was still illegal. A young teenage girl, I remember, called from New York City, whispering into her phone because she wanted to end her life because her parents had just forced her to have an abortion that day, and she didn't want to live anymore. We've had a call from hysterical women calling because they saw their dead baby in the toilet after taking the abortion pill, RU486, and they've expelled that fetus, and they see that in the toilet, and that, of course, fills them with horror what they've done. So we have all sorts of stories that of people, and they're never the same. They're never the same. Now, what do we say when they call? There's some questions that we always ask because we want to gain information from them. How long ago was your abortion? We want to know where she is in her history. Do you have any children is one question we'll always ask. Are you still with the father of the baby? If not, are you married and does your husband know about this? We always want to make sure that there's some level of knowledge there. How are you feeling about the abortion now? Are you attending a church? We want to get an idea of her spiritual level of where she's at if she hasn't revealed that. Where are you in your faith? And always want to know, how did you find out about Word of Hope? Because we have a lot of feelers out there, and we want to know how they find out about us. So our initial call is always to gain information from them, and then we'll follow up with that. Sometimes we may send them information if they're willing to have it received in their home in a nice brown envelope with no identifying information. We may send them a Bible study called Forgiven and Set Free, or we may refer them to a local CPC for help that we have gotten from Option Line, CareNet, or another agency in the area, depending on what her needs are. We always encourage them to call back and talk some more. Since this is primarily done by phone. Come back, call us again, tell us how you're doing. Let us know how you're doing with your healing. Did you make the contact? Whatever it may be. Listen, we always listen to them. We let them tell their story and then look for clues of where to go from there. And we always rely on the Holy Spirit to give us the right words. It's just amazing what can happen when you just open up as a vessel to be relayed in that way. What is our goal? Well, there's a couple things. Primarily, one of them is the healthy living. We want them to return to that level. Many of them will call us when perhaps they have a trigger occur. Now, a trigger is an event that occurs in their life that reminds them of the abortion, and it gives them an emotional response. So a trigger may occur, and the problem is that most post-abortive women don't recognize the trigger event that has caused the grief with the abortion experience. So we kind of need to connect that for them. So we want them to be alert to that's going to happen so that they can deal with it when it does occur. For example, if she starts to cry on the anniversary date of the abortion or the date the baby would have been born, that's called an anniversary reaction. And that's the trigger event is that date, and that will trigger a response to her. But she doesn't understand what's going on. Or she could be vacuuming her house with her vacuum cleaner, And the vacuum sound of the vacuum cleaner reminds her of the suction abortion machine, and she begins to cry or grieve. And she doesn't know what the connection is. So part of our example, what we want to do, is try and help her connect that so when it does occur, she doesn't go flip out and say, what's wrong with me? I must be going crazy. And that grief then becomes recognizable. But even more so, we want to make sure that they always hear that love of Christ applies to what they have done. So we need to do that over and over and over and over again. Tell them that Jesus died for that sin, they are forgiven. Tell them to accept that, encourage them to accept that. These people have a hard time accepting that for themselves. But it is available. I heard a post abortive woman say, I had to make a decision. I had to make a decision to accept God's forgiveness so I could live in that forgiveness rather than the shame of the abortion. I thought she said it very well. It was an active decision on her part to make, to accept that for herself, which she did do. Now, a couple stories I'm going to read. These are emails that Grace, who is our national director, sent to me. This is one in September from a gal named Jennifer. I'll give you an idea of some of the situations that we talk about. Just typing these words are hard for me. It is so out of my character, have gone through with it. Thank you for writing that Jesus still loves me. It is so hard for me to believe that after what I have done. I was too hasty in my decision. I knew it was wrong. I am full of regret. I have no one to talk to. My situation is especially bad because I am a Christian. I am a wife, and I am a mother of two. What was I thinking? I am not a teen in trouble. I know better. I would never have given this advice. I gave myself to anyone. Where was my faith? Could it have really been that bad to have a third child? No, it would have been the third best blessing of my life. How foolish of me. I have told no one. I need help. Please tell me the truth. Will God's light ever shine on me again? Will he place his hand over me and my family once more? Will he spare my family from the consequences of my decision and let only me deal with it? How can God ever bless me again? How can he trust me ever again? Will he take away my children because I haven't been faithful to this little one that didn't have a chance? What have I done? ? Please help me. I am far away, living in South Africa. Email is best for me. Signed, Jennifer. So you get an idea of the pain and the questions that these women ask, how spiritual they are in nature. Here's another one. My name is Amber, and I came across your website just now while thinking of the abortion experience I went through. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to email or call the toll-free hotline, but I wanted to contact someone for words of encouragement. Currently, I'm a senior in college, and I went through this experience last September. For a few months after, I felt like I did the right thing because my fiancé and I are both students and are unable to support a child. Now I have been feeling a lot of regret, and I cannot seem to get it off my mind. I'm a Christian and very much into my relationship with God, but I still feel like a horrible person because I could have prevented the pain I'm going through. I've called help hotlines a few times, but when someone answers, I hang up. After seeing your website, I thought maybe I could feel better talking to someone by email. I just can't seem to shake this mood lately. I feel ashamed and guilty over the situation. I'm wondering if you have any advice because I'm so heartbroken and devastated. Thank you for your time. Sincerely, Amber. This is a man. Hey there. I was wondering what I can do on the anniversary of my wife's abortion. She had an abortion years ago, and it was the day before her birthday. She went through counseling with you, and it helped her deal with it. I just want her to know I really care about her feelings and that I love her. Should I give her a card and tell her how much I love her? Any ideas would be great. Thanks. So those are some emails that just came in with the past month. This is a story of a man named Daniel, who was one of our clients, in fact still is, and I'm just going to do a little synopsis of it, but he and his girlfriend were pregnant, and she went and had an abortion and didn't tell him about it until later. And he was so upset and furious, he got into a car and went out to have a couple drinks. And one thing turned into another, and he was drunk and involved in a car collision that killed a person. Ended up in prison, which is where he contacted us, was in prison. Grace wrote to him for about 4 years while he was in prison talking to him. He became a Christian while in prison. And then he came out. He's out now. And in fact, Grace has him working a little bit for her at her home. And he rides his bike every day when he has to go see her, about 18 miles to go see her. But That was a man. He was so angry at what his girlfriend did, and he said he lost everything. He said, I've served 4.5 years in some of the worst prisons in Illinois. I lost everything I had, and my girl married someone else as a result of that abortion. So I want to talk a little bit about how you can help. And first of all, I want to talk about in your own personal life, because if you are considered a safe person, if you don't exhibit judgmental behavior, if you think people can trust you, are you known as someone who doesn't talk out of school, then there may be a likelihood that someone may talk to you and bring their... I've had it happen to me more than once where someone come and talk to me about their abortion experience. They feel I'm safe and they can share that. So they will do that. What you do then? Obviously, you are non-judgmental. You don't condemn their actions, but you do not say they did the right thing either. You are compassionate. Be an example of Christ's love by being compassionate and not judgmental. Express sorrow over their loss. It is a huge loss, a huge death issue. Listen to their story. Listen to their story, and it's all you really need to do. You're not telling them, you don't have to tell them anything they don't already know. You just need to listen. And then give them the hope and healing that comes through Jesus. If they're a Christian, that's what you really need to do. And then I want to, but watch your language. This is really, really important. In a group like this, I would figure probably 1 in 4 have an abortion experience in their past. You never know. 1 in 3 is perhaps the societal level. 1 in 4 perhaps in the church. So I'm always careful about what I say because I don't know who I'm talking to or what their experience may be in their past. So be very careful with your language when you are talking about this issue in a group or even with friends because you just don't know. I want to spend some time on how to get your church involved, which I think is really, really a critical issue for us. Their need is out there. There are so many people that are hurting, and they are in our pews. They're hurting in silence, and they need your help. But according to some statistics by the Elliott Institute, we don't talk about it much in the church. 73% of the respondents said that preaching on abortion was rarely or ever done in their place of worship, and I'm sure you can resonate with those kind of stats. 19% said that their pastor regularly preaches on abortion, but less than a quarter of the people interviewed said that these issues were less than adequately known and addressed in their churches. So our churches generally don't like to talk about this. It's somewhat considered controversial, particularly in the area of abortion and post-abortion. So most respondents to the survey felt that people in their church did not know the effect of abortion on women, men, and families. So how can you make your church a safe place where people feel safe to share their pain caused by abortion? First of all, where to start? Well, it's going to start with you, number one, okay? As LFLers and pro-life people, it must start with you. We must do more than speak out against abortion. I want you to ask yourself some questions, How do you talk about abortion? What's in your heart when you do that? Does the reality of abortion fill you with a profound sadness that in our country and churches, women have so little support that they feel that they have no other choice but to make this abortion decision? Or do you come across as being harsh and judgmental with such words as, I don't know how women can make such a decision and have an abortion? Are you considered to be a safe person that others can trust? Do you honestly believe deep down that you are a better person than a woman who made that decision, or are you really all the same? Those are questions you really need to ask yourself. 12 years ago, I started working at the Crisis Pregnancy Center in my area, CareNet, and when I started there, I was a pretty good Lutheran for life, where I could speak truth, I could speak scripture, I knew when life began, I knew all of that stuff. But at CareNet, I saw something really, really different. I saw real people trying to deal with this issue in their everyday life, the reality of what an unplanned pregnancy does to people. I saw women, pregnant women, abandoned by their families, made homeless if they chose to carry the pregnancy, kicked out of their homes. I saw women under enormous pressure from the men in their lives who wanted out of that pregnancy, and abortion was their choice. I saw women who wanted to carry the pregnancy but were so overwhelmed with the financial problems that thought they would experience and the lack of support from their families and communities that they thought abortion was their only choice. And even more critical, I talked to women, Christian women, who were so afraid of shaming their Christian parents that they seemed that that was the only choice they could make. So when you speak about abortion, do you acknowledge that the women in unplanned pregnancies face tremendous pressures that cause them to think that abortion must be their choice? It's important to speak truth. Yes, we always must speak truth, but it's also important to acknowledge that the pain and difficulties of women facing an unplanned pregnancy. So verbally is one way that you can help as well within your church, setting a tone for your congregation. Now, what about your individual actions? Well, we must do more than just speak out against abortion. Are you the one in your church ready to stand in the gap, offering emotional support and real help? Practice compassion every day in your life. Years ago, I was involved in Lutherans for Life. I was not invited to a baby shower for one of my friends whose daughter was in an unplanned pregnancy. Why? Because I was well known within the congregation as a member of Lutherans for Life, and it was thought that I would not approve of such a baby shower for a woman in an unplanned pregnancy. I had been speaking a lot of truth in my church, but I hadn't been able to, I had not relayed the compassion part, and so I was judged for that. So I knew about it, and I sent a belated baby gift to this young woman after the shower, to make up for that. But I learned from that experience. So when an unplanned pregnancy occurred in my own family, which they probably will in yours someday too, if they haven't already, I was the one who had the baby shower, okay? I was the one who did that. And think, why would we not welcome a child? I mean, what kind of people are if you're not going to welcome a child? This is a gift from God. Of course we're going to welcome a child. You see, pro-lifers sometimes have a bad reputation because many people equate those that speak against abortion as being harsh, unsympathetic, judgmental to women. So to overcome that mentality, we really must overemphasize our compassionate side if we're going to try and get through to people. So create a compassionate church, and it's going to have to start with you. So live it. Transparency. This is a really critical thing, too, as well. Transparency within your church. Transparency is defined as speaking frankly, openness, willing to talk about, candidness, not secretive or hidden. So do you have Bible studies in your church that deal with abortion or post-abortion? Does your pastor talk about it? You need to create a level of trust within your congregation that this subject is open and can be discussed if you ever hope to have women or men come to you with their experience in your church. So you have to create that level of trust that it's safe, they can come out. Educate. Do you educate in your church why women have abortions? This will help build the compassionate level in your church. Connect with your local crisis pregnancy center. You can bring your youth group to the crisis pregnancy center to have them talk to the kids about the work that they do. So there's all sorts of things that you can do, but you want to educate people on why women make this choice, why they feel that they have to. Leadership by the pastor is also critical. He has to be able to stand up for biblical truth, that all sin is forgivable. He needs to encourage transparency and acceptance at his level. Is the gospel being presented regularly, and is it being applied to the sin of abortion? Pastors, if you want to work with post-abortive men and women, do not be condemning. Watch that in your preaching if you want to reach them, because they will notice it immediately. And you can help bring the healing light of Christ to those who are really hurting from abortion. Teach about sin. We need to teach about sin, personal sin, not vaguely. Talk about how God views sin as all the same. A post-abortive woman told me that the turning point for her was a sermon she heard by her pastor talking about how God views sins. You know, humans tend to look at it, this one here, this one here, this one here, this one. Oh, this abortion is right here. But, oh, lying to my neighbor, that's way down here, you know. But his sermon was about how God looks at sin all the same. It's all at the same level. And this was the one key thing that helped her learn to get to go through healing from the abortion she had had. She wrote, "It was the single turning point for me, for me on a lifetime journey of forgiving myself and learning to live with the consequences of my sin." That being able to accept that forgiveness. So your sin may not be as visible as that woman caught in the unplanned pregnancy, but it's still there. Yeah, and like everyone else, Jesus is the only way you can get rid of it. So welcome the sinner within your church just as Jesus welcomes you. How about the church's actions? What are you doing? Do you collect diapers for your crisis pregnancy? Are the women and babies included in prayers regularly? Does your women's group mentor a young girl from the crisis pregnancy center? Those are all things that you can do within your church that will help you bring a message of compassion and tone to that church that will help relay to people that this is a safe place. Now, what message are you sending? And again, ask yourself the question, how would a pregnant girl be treated in my church, okay? And why do you think that way? There's a church in my neighborhood who had an occasion recently where the youth worker became pregnant outside of wedlock, and so the parents went to the pastor and they got rid of her. They drove her out and she left. They asked her to leave and she did leave. Now, what message did they send to that congregation? What did they tell her? What did they tell the other young women sitting in that congregation? Very obvious to me. You get pregnant, you better get rid of it because we're not going to tolerate it. We're not going to have sin like that in our congregation. So think about the message that your church sends. See, because the real problem, what's the real problem? It's really sexual sin that precedes the pregnancy. That's the real issue here. It's not the pregnancy. No one hates a baby. Everybody loves babies, right? No one hates babies. Years ago in Lutherans for Life, there was an argument. Could we offer compassion to a woman in an unplanned pregnancy? Because, you know, if we did, weren't we really just condoning that sin that occurred previously that caused the pregnancy? And I just urge you to err on the compassion side and stop that abortion right there. Because if we don't do that, we are just leading her right to the abortion clinic. We're pushing her right there. So we have to be really, really careful. Now, I brought you some materials about what ways that you can promote Word of Hope within your church. And that's this little packet here, and I want to talk just briefly about that, and then we'll entertain some questions. There is all sorts of ways that you can help women and men within your church reach Word of Hope or find abortion healing or encourage that. All sorts of hands-on thing. The first one I listed here was links. How many have a church website? Okay, establish a link on your website to Word of Hope. This is how you can do it, okay? It's right here, and you can take this sheet home with you. There are posters available. Here's a poster that Lutherans for Life provides. You can hang someplace in your church. Maybe somebody will spot it if you have other, you know, bulletin boards someplace. And that's available on LutheransForLife.org media downloads, okay? So you can get those right online and print it up. That's one thing you can do there. Then there's LFL resources, all available here. I put that into your sheet where you can go. There's articles, sermons, worship helps, other AV materials. Put an article in your church newsletter. There's all sorts of things you can do. You could sponsor a healing group in your church. We have a church in our area that does that, and I put some information. They partner with the CareNet, and they sponsor a healing group as part of one of their recovery programs. And you can go to their website and see how they do it. That's a pretty sophisticated way if you have those resources in your area. But you can also do that. Then also, we have all these other little things. This is a bathroom card, and I gave you one. There's more up here. You can take some. Women's bathrooms are a great place to disseminate information, okay? Great spot. You can put a little rack in there, or you can put a little thing on the inside of the stall, which is even better because that's extremely private in the inside of a stall. So you can put these little bathroom cards there, or you could even put brochures, which I also gave you the Word of Hope brochure you could put in there as well. There's all sorts of stuff available that can help you in your church if you try and build a level of compassion to reach those who are wounded. So I just want to encourage you to do that. And I'll just a little story. You can do this. You can be the deliverer of good news to women and men who may need it. Just a little bit of my personal story. I was visiting with Grace, our national director, and the phone rang, and she said, "Here, Diane, you take this call." Well, I don't normally do those things. But I thought, okay, I can do this. I know enough. I can do it. So I answered the call. It was a young woman, not in the Chicago area. But she was struggling, Christian, struggling with the guilt and shame she felt from an abortion years ago. She had confessed her sin. She thought, "Oh, great, I'm going to confess it. I'll be fine." And she woke up the next morning and still felt like junk. So she had hoped it would all go away, but it didn't go away. So we talked for a while, and I gave her some ideas. I said, you know, just every day look at Scripture. She was a Christian. She knew it. She just needed to be reminded every day of that forgiveness. So I suggested that to her. She was worried about all sorts of things. I said, put a worry box. Women are worried all the time anyhow, right? So in my women's Bible class, we had a worry box, and you'd worry about something, you'd write it down, you give it to God, you put it in that box, and then you skip it. So I said, do that. That may help. You want to tell your story and you can't because you're a teacher? Well, go online. Go online. There's, Silent No More Awareness. There's all sorts of websites you can go to where you can post your own story and help you relieve some of those things that you want to do. Now, how did I remember all of that? I have no idea. I have no idea how I remembered all those things to tell her. There certainly was no bullet points, but I listened to her and tried to relay her fears about how I could help her. So you can do those things too. So I thought we'd just close with this Bible verse that we opened with. The Spirit of the Almighty Lord is with me because the Lord has anointed me to deliver good news to humble people. He has sent me to heal those who are brokenhearted, to announce the captives, that captives will be set free and prisoners will be released. So just get involved with this issue. There's so many people out there that need our help. And make that your church that compassionate place. So we have some time for questions, right? Yes. And I've got two hands. Yes, ma'am.
We used the bathroom thing. I had some track racks put in there. And I didn't do the bathroom parts, but I did the track racks. And every time I would put them in, somebody in the congregation would come and remove them.
Yeah.
And
I would talk to.
They've been empty for about a year now. I don't know if I should try again or what.
I would talk to my pastor or my elder and just tell them this is going on. And
they know.
They know. Okay. Then I would just try again. Someone obviously doesn't like that information out there, and that's just, I think that's part of the risk you always take, that someone will not like that. Maybe just put out one at a time. But you still, or even put it inside a stall, that may be helpful. They may not even know it's there, but they spot it when they go in. And I think that does help happen. It's like putting out this display of crosses. As soon as you do that, somebody smashes them, It's just kind of the risk we have to take if we want to try and reach them. But also, you see, your pastor can set a tone for that as well, too. So I would have him talk about that. Sir, right here.
Years ago, I'm thinking 10, 11, 12 years ago, there was a video back in the day, your husband would remember, before DVDs, called After the Choice.
Yeah.
And I believe it was put out by one of the Pope. Does that sound
familiar? We have not done a video, but I know the video you mean. Yeah.
I can't find it in
anywhere?
DVD format or online or anywhere.
I think it's a short one, as I recall, with women's testimonies.
Maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think Dr. Lamb may have had it at one time, because we would do some seminars together, and he would show that video.
Yeah, I would like to get it in a more modern format.
Okay, well, you haven't found it online or anywhere?
Yeah.
If we can find out who the publisher is, we can probably do that. I'll see what I can find, but it's not from us, and we did not produce that. Yes, Virginia.
Just really quick, I delivered some of the brochures to a DCE in our community, and she made a big point to say, and I'm also putting them in the men's restroom.
Yeah, well, that it doesn't hurt, yeah. Yeah. It's back there. Yes, sir.
The word of hope, I think it's a great word. Do you have a lot of people working there? Are they 24 hours? I don't know how available are they to do it if someone does it.
They're available. They don't answer the phone all the time, but our reasoning is they're usually not in a crisis situation, crisis. They've lived with it for a while, and they'll leave a message, and we can call back. Grace, she has emails. She answers them every day. Usually it'll take her to midnight to answer them. No. No, we don't. Grace is, and Grace Kern and does primarily the work. She's MSW, and her daughter, who is a licensed counselor, will do some of the post-abortion groups as well as the sexual abuse groups, which is also a sophisticated area. But there's a lot of, I'm not a licensed social worker, and I could help this gal by just talking to her. So there's a lot of ways that we can help by just being there for people. But we don't have a lot of people that do this sort of work at all. I think so right now, but if we can publicize, there's so many people out there that are looking for help. If we can publicize that, we'd love to help more people and take on more, if we can.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yes, ma'am.
How would you go about advertising for a ministry, a healing ministry,
in your church, just put it in a bulletin.
On the other side, and I thank you for bringing that up, I have bulletin inserts on the other side. I forgot to mention that. That you can advertise Word of Hope. There's two special ones I put in there, one for Mother's Day and one for Sanctity of Human Life Sunday, which are very bad Sundays for post-aborted women and men. Okay, so those are kind of specialized. And then there's three in the middle that you can use. Just put them in there. Just put in the little insert or the little bulletin.
But if you wanted to have a ministry at your congregation.
Okay, if you wanted to do that, then I would connect with the Crisis Pregnancy Center first in my area, see what they offer. They usually have more sophisticated people who are well-trained in leading groups, if that's the way you wanted to go. And you could, if you wanted to bring some, have women come into your church, you have to be really know what you're doing to do that. So I would encourage you to talk to them first if you have that resource available. First of all, I would go there. And then you'd have to, if they don't, then we'd have to look for something else. Yeah.
It's doing a quick Google on After the Choice, Concerned Women for America.
Okay.
Has it available in DVD on their website.
Okay, there we go. See, that's why he
what a
great guy.
Keep him around.
Yes, sir.
So I'm a pastor, and as a pastor, I sometimes preach with reference to this topic, and I have to admit that I sometimes feel like I'm speaking into a vacuum. I don't get a lot of feedback from the congregation. People don't say, great, you talked about abortion again today, Pastor. Or it seemed a little heavy today, Pastor. Or, boy, I don't know, maybe you could have emphasized grace more, Pastor. I don't know what they would say, because they don't talk about it.
No, they don't. They're afraid.
And so if you have a pastor who dares to bring this into the pulpit, And if you think he does a good job, if you think that he could maybe shift his emphasis a little bit, feedback. I think, if you have that kind of relationship, try to encourage. Because I think that's one reason why we're not preaching on it.
You don't get the feedback.
We don't get feedback.
And I would suggest you start preaching the forgiveness aspect first. Yeah. There's a pastor here, Pastor Gieschel. From our area, and he and I worked together on that because he was having the same difficulty.
Yeah.
And we specifically addressed why he was getting no feedback,
right.
He knew women weren't coming on that Sunday because they knew he was going to preach on abortion, so they were not there, and he needed to deal with that. So we worked through a system of how we could do that. So it might be good to talk to him. I'll introduce you if I see. He's there, it is.
Let's give him your thanks right now for speaking.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I'd like to visit your church. Where are you?
It's St. Thomas Lutheran Church, Ann Arbor.
Oh, Ann Arbor. Where do you celebrate? Do you do
this
kind of with the
light
bites out of
the
Living for Life?
Very often do the light Sunday, and then, just as it comes up in the lecture.
Okay.
I just
want
a
quick question.
What
about these people doing multiple abortions? What is their thinking there when they're not regretting it, or it's going to happen later that it's going to hit them, or what? These people have 12, 15,
well,
people have that.
We have not dealt with that many. I mean, but their repeat abortions are about 45%. It's very high. Mm-hmm. I think for a woman who's already had abortion, she's already done it. She's already gone through it once. Yeah, from a psychological standpoint, I'm already bad. I've already made a bad mistake.
So that's why they
and sometimes they haven't gotten out of the circumstances that caused the first one. I've seen that at the Crisis Pregnancy Center where they've come in and they have that abortion in their past, and they still may be in those same circumstances. We still try. You try and help them, but there could be difficulties there. Yes, ma'am. Well, we have, yes.
Is have an abortion because, it's your body, it's yourself, there's that separation or supposed to be. What do you do when you have people that call that have no Christian?
That's a very harder situation. That's a hard situation because you have to break through that situation first.
And there are people that think religion is the reason why people are feeling guilty about having
religion. Yeah, yeah. I think probably, in a level of a woman who calls us, she's a secularist and has that feeling, there's only so much we can do until she becomes amenable to hearing that there is that you have broken your own moral code and you need some sort of higher power or some way to deal with that. And then we can work with her as from a Christian aspect. I know Grace told me that she had a girl that called, and that was a very difficult situation, that she still was struggling with this denial issue. And she had sent her to one of our Lutheran churches, one of our Lutheran pastors' wives, to work to try and reach her. Now, if we'll be successful, I don't know. But in the meantime, there's so many others that we can work with that are already there that we need to be able to reach them.
Are there any secular agencies that are recognized?
They don't, you know, the secular counseling is, you know, it's legal, it should be fine. You know, you didn't do anything wrong. Well, they know they've done something wrong. You know, you shouldn't feel guilty. So they will deny that there's even any problems. So, I mean, a Christian counselor may be able to help them more, but they struggle with how to deal with this sort of issue as well. It really is, as the gal said, we have to go from a Christian worldview. That's the best way we can deal with it, that they need to understand. Now, at our pregnancy center, there's two Bible studies we use for our Restore program. One is Forgiven and Set Free, and then which is a heavy, heavy, heavy scripture. The other one is also scripture, but a little bit less intense scripture. I don't have the name of it off the tip of my tongue. For those people who are come in not with a heavy Christian background, but are searching for healing. So they do both have scripture in them, but it's not as strong. And so those are healing aspects that you can use as well, trying to reach that, you know, where he said reach people where they're at, you know. And for a person, if you're dealing with that, care, love, listen. Just like you were doing evangelism, you know, establish the relationship first. Then you can approach those issues. If you're safe, they will talk to you. So, but practice those very basic issues of care. Okay.
Thank Diane, and then we'll have a prayer.